This is Real Life with Lisa Jesswein on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Lisa Jesswein.
Hey, everybody. Thank you. We've got a real treat for you today. Well, it's definitely a treat for me because the person that we're interviewing today just happens to be a friend of mine. But beyond that, the reason I wanted to interview this person is because, he is a profoundly gifted and creative person, which I enjoy so much hanging with those type of people. Producer Remy's another one of those. But he wrote a book. Now, I know you think, well, Lisa, you interview authors all the time. Yeah, but they're mostly nonfiction. This person that we're talking to today, Andrew Lark, wrote a fantastic fiction book that is going to be a series, which I'm super excited about. The book is called Better Boxed and Forgotten. Hey, Andrew, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I am doing great. Thank you so much for being here and being able to spend this time with me because, and look at me, I'm fidgeting in my seat because I've read the book and I love the book. I hold the book. It's very good. And I actually have a signed copy.
Yes.
I'm normally a nonfiction reader, which is why I'm so excited, because this is fiction.
Right.
I want you to tell everybody a little bit about how this book got started.
Okay. How it got started was I have a friend who has a very large house, and there was a dining room with a very large and creepy chandelier above the dining room table. And every now and then, for no reason that we could ever discern, the thing would start rocking on its own, just swinging on its chain. And every now and then, two crystals off this chandelier would just go missing. And then we would find them maybe a week or two later in some strange, bizarre place in the house.
Now, this is real. That really happened.
This is real. But then, honestly, we began to start playing around and we started playing tricks on each other with it. But there were definitely some bizarre things that would go on with this chandelier. So we kind of made up a story that, well, there must be a little girl living in the house who maybe she died in the house and she was obsessed with her mother's jewelry. So the crystals on the chandelier remind her of her mother's jewelry. So, you know, we kind of constructed that as a story. And, you know, like any urban legend or legend, that just kind of took on a life of its own. So there were people in this house. Now, I lived in this house when I was a college student, so there were other young college students living there as
well. You guys
were
studying very hard instead of studying. You're making up stories about
exactly,
chandeliers.
Yeah, right.
That's good. That's good to know.
Absolutely, yeah. So we, you know, so like I said, this it just kind of turned into a ghost story. Now, was this chandelier rocking because of the 18-wheeler semis driving by down the street delivering gravel to the landscape company nearby? I don't know.
Maybe.
Right. Could it have been the trains roaring by just behind the backyard fence? Don't know. But ghost stories are much more fun.
I like the one about the little girl, which, by the way, plays a very big role in your book, Better Boxed and Forgotten. So you start out with this sort of mythical ghost story that you had created in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And then you set it in a wonderful setting that means something to all of us. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Okay. Well, Indian Village is a neighborhood in Detroit built, you know, in the turn of the century. Many of these gorgeous, beautiful old homes by some of Detroit's former lumber barons, early automobile executives. They built these gorgeous, gorgeous homes in a neighborhood known as Indian Village, composed of Seminole, Burns, and Iroquois streets. And I decided, well, you know, Detroit really needs a good ghost story. M. Night Shyamalan, when he did his movie The Sixth Sense, it was a great ghost story that took place in Philadelphia. And I was really inspired by that movie. I thought, well, he did this wonderful thing with Philadelphia. I want to do this thing with Detroit. I want to construct a ghost story based on some things in my past, living in this house with a creepy chandelier. And, you know, time, memory, creativity all percolates. And I guess that's how I came up with this story. So Better Boxed and Forgotten, my book, takes place on Seminole Street in a beautiful old mansion that's run down and decrepit. And my protagonist, Daniel Lintz, inherits this house. And because he wants to kind of reconnect with the family that kind of cast him aside, the house becomes symbolic in his way to reconnect with his family. The problem is he becomes obsessed with the house and the objects that he finds in the archive. And with one thing in particular that he finds in the archive. So it's a Pandora's box story. Careful what you open, because all hell will break loose. And of course, it being a paranormal novel, all hell does break loose.
And there will be times when you are reading this where you don't like David. And I wasn't prepared for that.
Right. Yeah, I wrote a book where I have a flawed protagonist. I have someone who becomes so obsessed with the house that he neglects the reality of what's going on with his family around him. His wife, Paige, is oblivious to what's going on. She's really kind of embraced life down in Indian Village. At first, she was reluctant, but then once she gets down there and starts meeting people, she likes it. Now, Daniel's son, Elliot, is affected by many of the things that are going on in the house. And I guess this is, you know, somewhat of a, I was influenced a bit by also Stephen King's The Shining. Mm-hmm. Something similar happens in The Shining with Jack Torrance and his son, you know, like that. So I guess it's maybe a similar construct, similar but different.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there is just the right amount of creep factor with history mixed with, you know, rich characters, because each one of them has like a backstory, and then that connects to that person, and then what happened over there with that one. And who was the hardest character to really get a handle on when you were writing?
I think the hardest character to get a handle on was probably my protagonist, Daniel. I had to really balance, you know, he tells the story. It's written in a first-person narrative. Daniel is telling you this story. You as a reader, perhaps you're like a counselor and he's sitting at your chair, maybe telling you this book is an account of what he's gone through. So you're not there to judge him. You're there to listen to him. So although Daniel's flawed, he's very smart. He has a very compelling story to tell. His passion for the house is obvious. His love for the family, his family is obvious. But his obsession for the house, obviously, is a bit greater. And that's why obsession is, you know, not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, it can cloud our judgment and have an adverse impact on you know, the people that we love.
This is an easy read, too. And what I mean by that is you are going to want to keep reading page after page. It doesn't speak to you in too highbrow of a manner,
right.
Even though we're, you know, talking about, you know, some things within a home that, you know, if you've never experienced it, I didn't know what that was or that was. But you do a really good job of explaining what each little detail is.
Thank you. I attribute that to my great Wayne State University education. I had some great professors down there. Hats off to Bernard Levine. I took a class with him called Imaginative Writing, and he was really big on, you know, don't tell, show. So my book is very descriptive, but I don't think it's so descriptive to the point where you get lost in description. But I really want you to see this house. I want you to see Detroit. I want you to see the neighborhood. And I think I do that pretty effectively. I mean, you have a very good sense of place when you read this book.
And I have been fortunate enough to actually do some readings from this book around the area, even in an old mansion. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we were lucky enough. My brother-in-law is very, very good friends with a guy who owns a very historic mansion in Detroit known as the Kresge Mansion. It's in the Arden Park neighborhood, not far from Boston Edison along Woodward Avenue, for those of you familiar with Detroit. It's a 8,000 square foot mansion built. Actually, it's the 100th anniversary of the mansion this year. And he had a Halloween party / birthday party for his house that I was lucky enough to go to. Anyway, I had asked you and some other actor friends of mine to come and play some parts in my book. So I didn't have a reading where I'm going to open my book and just redo a group of people. I think that's kind of boring. And in that I have a theater background and I know so many very talented people, I had asked a few of my friends, including you, to participate. And you played Paige, Daniel's
the
wife.
Uh-huh.
And you also played Nora, the creepy little ghost girl.
You know that, I'm looking for that thing she says so I could
right.
read it. What page is that on?
Yeah. Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, she
it.
Reads this. I bet if I said the first couple lines, you would remember it. It would trigger your memory.
Say the lines, and then I'll say the first two lines, and then I'll say them back.
I had a little birdie. His name was Enzo. I opened up the window.
Influenza.
Yes, exactly. Now imagine hearing that in a mansion that was built in 1915 when you're alone in this place and some entity walks up to you. And it would probably raise the hairs on the back of your neck.
Just
but
a little bit.
What was wonderful is we were sitting in this vast living room with the coffered ceilings and the gorgeous environment of this house, a fire going, 50 people assembled in the room. And Lisa starts this little sing-songy poem that Nora does. And I saw people visibly chill. I saw them, you know, just kind of get the willies. Exactly. And then I had heard also from the owner of the mansion, my friend Patty, I asked him prior to the reading, well, you know, this is a big old house. Do you guys have anything going on in here? And he said that, yes, there are wacky things that happen in the house. So so a very, very appropriate place for
perfect
reading.
Setting. Mm-hmm. Now, this is not going to be the end, because all I'm going to say is at the end of this book, you hurry up and write the second book, because you're going to want the second book because you're left hanging. There's no doubt about it. So how's that going?
Yeah, I have a cliffhanger. I tell one story. This book can stand on its own as a book by itself. You know, we're introduced to the neighborhood, we're introduced to the house, we're introduced to the archive. We explore one object in the archive, and we take that object to its limits as far as what it's capable of doing. At the end of the story, that object is safely put someplace so that it can't hurt anyone else. Maybe. And and then we're left with, well, I'm not going to give it away. But
yeah, don't.
Someone we love very much in the book is put inside a situation that he needs to get out of. So I have a perfect setup for book two. Better Box and Forgotten does stand on its own as a story.
Yes.
But the last chapter is going to put you in a place where, okay, I need to know what happens to this lovely person that I love in this book. So let's get going on that.
Absolutely. So if you're looking Better Boxed and Forgotten, you can find it a couple of ways. You can find out more about Andrew at andrewlarkbooks.com. If you're locally here in Detroit, all the Pure Detroit locations have Better Boxed and Forgotten or Amazon, okay? Amazon has Kindle downloads and then paper copies as well, and also Create Space. So if you're looking for a really great, time away where you just want to melt into something. Go ahead.
I also want to add that the book is available at Page's Bookshop on Grand River in the Rosedale Park neighborhood. Yes. And if you happen to be heading up north to Traverse City, it's available at Horizon Books on Front Street in downtown Traverse City.
That's got to feel so good to you.
It does.
You know, I want to talk a little bit about the process of what a writer goes through.
Okay.
And I'm going to put this in quote, the demons that sort of happen by going through this process. Because we have a lot of people who listen who are writers.
Yeah.
And so talk to us about that.
Well, I know that there are some writers who have to shut themselves off into their quiet space with their, you know, some people are old school. They write with a pad, a legal pad. You know, I write with a laptop, but I don't mind a little stimulation. I've written parts of this book in coffee houses. I've written parts of this book in libraries. If there's a little bit of a buzz or a hum of activity going on in the background, I don't mind that at all. Plus, every now and then, I need to look up from my laptop screen and, like, see something that's, you know, maybe stimulating. What's going on outside the windows of the coffee house? Who's sitting nearby? Look at that student studying over there. Whatever. But I do need a little bit of distraction because it's just the way I operate. I also have a tendency to self-edit a lot. If I pound out 8-10 pages one day, The next day, I'm going to probably wheedle those 8 to 10 pages down to 4 or 5 pages. It just happens. It's my process. I've heard people say, you should never edit your own work. Well, I do, and it works for me. But I need to concentrate. I don't work with outlines. I don't outline my book. I'll go chapter by chapter, because I think that there's a beginning and an end. And I'm not linear. I'm not straight.
Sure.
You know, I meander a little bit, but I don't lose focus. You know, I keep my eyes on the prize, mm-hmm. but I want to take the reader on a journey. If I take you at a sharp right turn, pretty soon there's going to be a left turn that will get you back on track. So that's basically how it works. And I've heard people that do write books and they outline them meticulously, sometimes those books can be a little predictable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think my book is predictable.
No.
And because I don't work with an outline, I think that's,
right.
You know, I allow for surprises.
What was this book in any way emotional for you to write?
It was different. I wouldn't, you know, the emotional part came, it really hit me when, okay, this is my first book. I've written plays in the past. But I submitted my book for publication, and, you know, a couple weeks later, the proof copy came back. It looked exactly like the book that is now sitting on your desk. I opened up the box and I'm like, oh my gosh, look, my book. My first book with a beautiful cover and flap copy, and I rifled through it and I'm looking at it, and you know, and that was the emotional part. This I had achieved the goal of writing a book, and I was elated with that. That was emotional, but I think I kept a clear head because, well, I had to.
Mm-hmm.
With my proof copy, I had to proof the copy. Did I find some mistakes? Sure, I did. I also sent the proof copy to my editor, and you know,
yeah.
She found some additional mistakes, and that's just, you know, part of the process.
What do you want people? What would you hope that people feel after they read this book?
Well, I want them to feel that they were just taken on a fun ride. That it's not just a ghost story. But it's an exploration of a man's obsession with things that he probably should not be so obsessed with. It's an exploration into this man's past, you know, manifested with this house and the house's contents. He becomes too obsessed with these objects. And so I guess if there's any lesson or takeaway from the book, maybe it's a cautionary tale to, okay, you have this wonderful, beautiful thing, great, but you know what? Those you love are way more important. You should be able to walk away from all of your things, your objects, your personal possessions, and embrace the ones you love. So I guess that would be my takeaway.
Please tell me it's not going to take till book 3 till he figures that out.
I think he's slowly getting it. You know, but Daniel's, I think he's a tough nut to crack. And, he has learned some lessons, and toward the end of the book, he does muse a little bit on some of the mistakes he may have made. But in a book, you can't really come right out and say that. You have to show it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Daniel, well, this, you know, book 2 is going to be a whole new adventure. So he's, you know, he's learned something from book 1's adventure. He's going to learn something from book 2's adventures as well. Now, by the end of book 3, and I'm anticipating 3 books out of this series, I'm still deciding on he's going to go one of 2 ways. It's either going to be a bad way or a good way. So, but I haven't decided yet. So, yeah.
So, right, Andrew, if you want it to be the good way, read the first book, see what's going on, and then vote. We should be able to do that. We should vote which way we want him to go.
Yeah, that would be fine with me. I love hearing from readers. I've been to a number of book events, some book signings, some author events. I actually have another author event coming up this Saturday in Corktown at the Corktown Hotel. And every now and then, I run into readers who have read my book. And I'm getting so much like positive feedback, and they love the journey that the book has taken them on. So it's very encouraging.
Yeah. So in, this would also be a wonderful gift for someone if you know someone who sure. loves to read or mm-hmm. maybe even likes ghost stories a little or a little bit of mystery, then this would be a really good gift.
You know, it's more of an English tradition than an American tradition, I think. But on Christmas Eve, maybe we've all heard that that line from that very famous Andy Williams song, "It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year." Uh-huh. At one point, he says there will be ghost stories.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, people are like, ghost stories? What? Well, it's a tradition more in England than in America that people get together on Christmas Eve in front of the roaring fire with their chestnuts and whatnot and their cups of hot drink or mulled wine or whatever, and they start telling ghost stories. And this is kind of a tradition. So, you know, if you want to follow maybe the English tradition of telling ghost stories, what better way than to open up certain passages of my book and just, you know, let her rip.
Well, it is also a tradition here on my show that we do something called the RL3, which okay. is three silly, goofy questions mm-hmm. that let us find out a little bit more about you. Now, we're going to do something new for the very first time. We have a bunch of cards here with different questions on them, and we're going to let you choose two of them. You can only pass once.
Okay.
And then the third one, I'll tell you what it is when we get to that. So I'm going to pass this off to you. No fair looking at the questions.
I won't look. I'll close my eyes.
Close your eyes.
She
take
can
one
see
out.
That I'm closing my eyes.
Yeah.
One or two?
Well, one first.
Okay.
Read that one and answer it. What does it say?
Okay.
Or you can pass, either one.
The question is, if I could work as an assistant to anyone for a year, who would I choose? Wow.
First of all, he's like, no, I'd want the assistant. But anyways, right. who are you assistant to?
Okay. Anybody who knows me, this is going to sound so geeky and fanboy, I'm
Good.
Sorry, but okay. You know, I'm a giant David Bowie fan, okay? And if David Bowie needs any assistance with it, I don't care if I need to polish his shoes. I don't care if I need to wipe the dirt off of his whatever. I don't care what it is. David Bowie, you know what? For 1 year, you know, I won't be a total fanboy. I won't be a geek. David Bowie, right. if you're listening, I'm available. You know,
I love it.
My website. Yep.
All right, there's question number one. Question number two.
All right,
drawing again.
Okay, am I?
You still have
closed?
Your pass. You can't pass the third question, so this
okay.
is the only one you can pass if okay. you don't like it.
Would you be likely to survive alone in the wilderness?
Oh.
As long as I had, yeah, okay, I will say yes. If I have a generator and I have my laptop, if I have some books, if I have music I can listen to, yeah, I'm going to need my creature comforts, I admit it. But if I were alone in the wilderness with no technology, maybe just a Swiss Army knife, I might have a tough time.
Yeah, it's not going to be enough entertainment for you, the squirrels and all that.
I'm a city boy, you know, and if I had to, like, skin my food or hunt, no, I don't know. Yeah, let's just say yes, but the caveat is I need some technology. But no, if I'm all out there alone wearing just the skins of animals yeah. and with a knife in my mouth.
Were you ever, a Boy Scout or gone camping
yeah,
or anything
you know,
like that?
I was a Cub Scout. I never made it into the Boy Scouts. And I remember we had a camping trip, and the older Boy Scouts were helping to facilitate. And one of the, I don't know, what do you call it, a den father, decided to put on a Bigfoot costume. And
scare you.
Yeah, oh yeah, he scared all of us. I remember one of my friends running off into the woods. It took about 3 hours to find him. Marky, where are you? Anyway.
Now I'm guessing where that answer from the other one came. This all makes sense now. Well, the third and final question is one we ask absolutely everybody, and that's where we find out what your fantasy name is, which means we need the name of your first pet and the name of the street you grew up on. So what is the name of your first pet?
My first pet was Pepper.
Ah, this is going to be good already. Pepper and the street you grew up on?
Saratoga.
Pepper Saratoga. And what occupation would Pepper Saratoga have?
Well, come on. It sounds like a private eye, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, Pepper Saratoga, private eye.
Caught you in the act.
Exactly.
I love it. Well, we're...
Freeze sugar.
Thank you so much for coming on today. Make sure everybody, if you want to check out Better Boxed and Forgotten, you can go locally to Pure Detroit locations. On Amazon is a great way to find it and create space. This would be a wonderful time for you to check out something new, and this book is wonderful. Thank you, Andrew, for being with us.
Thank you so much.